interesting things that happen when you start to think about applying more and more layers of software sophistication on top of fundamentally simple pieces of hardware. So, how is GNU Radio implemented and how does this stuff actually get some specific piece of stuff that's required in a communication system? And in really understanding that element of a communication system so that you really lowers the barrier to entry and it allows many more people to become involved in playing with this stuff. Here's sort of a simple Hello World example. I don't know that I really need to describe this. I don't know that this crowd is as likely to have somebody blurt out what this is. There's then sort of the second piece of the problem, which is whatever little bits of RF stuff are required to up and down convert the intermediate frequencies that come in and out of these A to D converters from the actual frequency bands of interest and down converters all the time. The hard part in making GNU radio stuff hard, the problem, of course, is that the digitizing hardware and sound cards is really efficiently readable to have a completely pleasant conversation. And it's an amazing thing to realize that everybody using that mode on a given frequency band is tuned to the same frequency. Well, at least they've got their radios all tuned to the same frequency. The most popular is sort of a waterfall spectrum display of everything that's going on in that audio that simultaneously decodes all of the ones that are active in your passband right now, the machines in question. The GNU radio guys started out by buying some very high-quality PCI bus instrumentation cards that had good quality analog to digital and digital to analog converters. The problem is that there's a lot of money for the hardware. That's still a very small fraction of the overall cost of the project converter on a PCI card. In fact, the card that Matt and Eric, I think, did most of the laptops built in the last year or so have pretty good USB 2.0 spigots in them. All modern desktop machines have it, and it's 480 megabits or something. This particular notebook can sustain 32 megabytes things that are all using the same little Cypress USB 2.0 micros of two of these, an SSRP kit from David Carr and a USRP, which and buy things like this on the web, and you know, you're someone like me who travels a lot. You're frequently buying these from like hotel rooms in the middle of the night in arbitrary countries. And it helps if you remember to tell your wife to expect a package from countries that look like they were wrapped by six-year-olds and have been through the ringer board for that particular USB microcontroller. Now, what David did was design this board backwards so you can look at the front and back of both of the boards. He'd be so kind as to not set exactly too much. So the total cost of putting one of these together is an AMI kit, which is the circuit board and all of the parts except the oscillator that go on it. Not to be outdone, this Derbyshev guy, so a few analog components, a connector, 9-volt battery to power it, and something to get your RF in on. Somebody asked me the other day about surface mount soldering, and it's a heck of a lot easier than doing through-hole soldering is. I find it much easier to solder surface mount stuff. I've been working for more than a decade on things that have flown on amateur satellites and so forth. The analog 2400 hertz superimposed waveforms and get pretty satellite weather photos out. Stuff like that. I mean, these are all things that you really can do by playing around with this stuff without having P, which stands for the Universal Software Radio Peripheral. And a big honking FPGA in the middle of the board. The FPGA is interesting. It's a fairly simple board conceptually, but as you can see, it's a reasonably complex board in implementation. Here's another picture with these generic daughter cards on it. The generic daughter cards are basically just to bring the A to D pin headers on the board, and those have been pinned so that if you happen to A to D and D to A converters of interest. So if you're trying to do serious part of now we find out if the board's still working. Let me show you the code that's running. And then I gather folks wandering in here means I'm probably like more or less out of time, right? Keep going? Okay. I can sort of FM receiver that's currently running. Is that better? It's an interesting use of that kind of simultaneity. is for stuff like monitoring all of the amateur radio repeaters in a given area. Or imagine, if you will, a public safety person. Instead of having, you know, it's not unusual in the States, at least, for them to have 10 or code, right? Well, what is down conversion other than mixing two signals and picking which one of the products you're interested in, and how is that different from aliasing? So it turns out the trick is listen to, and so we're getting the first down conversion in the receiver for free. It's a 64 megasample per second digitizer. The Python's eating 70%, but that's mostly doing the display updating. I've seen Matt on a similar kind of system decode, you know, a half dozen FM stations all at once, and the machine's not really. The reason I really got this board is to use it as the core of the RF style. Health issues in my family and so forth mean that while I've had this hardware for a few weeks, what you're interested in doing is learning about software radio concepts and principles. You can do all of that if you've got an existing, you know, FM receiver or a police scanner, one of those kinds of radios. You can usually find scanners, by the way, at people's, with things like that, you can do things like the weather satellite reception with a sound card, or, okay, so let's go back, let me finish up. So, that's all cool. This is actually, guys, was to make enough progress quickly enough that they'd have a completely open source implementation of a completely functional high definition over the air TV receiver out there before the broadcast bit, thus would be in violation of the DMCA for doing software decoding of high-def TV. I'm telling you about this. I can't take any credit for this. But this is a sort of good and bad thing. The good part is that it really could be the solution to the spectrum utilization problem if we apply a lot of these adaptive behaviors and cognitive radio kinds of principles. It also make it somewhat more difficult to think about how you would control, type, certify. What does this mean for the people who currently manage spectrum around space from entirely different directions, from entirely different worldviews, and entirely different levels of understanding of what's actually going on? There are people who don't care that that's sort of a non sequitur and that, you know, it'd be off, just not go there. The point I'm trying to make is that it's impossible to be very interesting as we go forward to see how all of this evolves on GNU Radio. There's a wiki that's reasonably well developed with information about these different pieces of hardware and how to get them and so forth. The mailing list is wonderful. It's very high signal-to-noise ratio. Okay, thank you very much. It's back here. Thank you.
Okay. Everybody hear me now?
Yeah.
Great. Well, LCA has traditionally been the place where the new and the move to an online format, the committee was decided. My apologies to everybody that made the start of the Debian Miniconf. I'm going to reuse a joke, but it'll be fun. Pierre Waugh is vice president. Anthony Towns. Yes, committee, stand up. Everybody, all the committee. Come on. Yeah. Here's where Stuart should be. Muscular conference to be. But about this time I got tired of slides, so I put the rest of the talk all on one slide. For a specific purpose, they put in a proposal that is publicly assessed, goes to the Linux Australia mailing list, and then if it's approved, the money is dispersed. Community code is another thing that you would have heard about if you're at the code for the doll, as he said. So Linux Australia is providing, once again, the legal entity, because when you enter something like that, and the process of handling those donations can be quite painful. So this is a scheme that has been put in place to make all that go smoothly. The free trade agreement and intellectual property lobbying, a very important area. Well, it is a very important area, it's not just potentially, but it is an area that there will be some more information made available so that developers out there...
With promoting the conference and such. But we also found that, you know, running a media training for a few people is obviously quite expensive. What we ended up doing was actually getting a couple of LA people trained as well. We got Matt Palmer trained, a couple of LA people, and obviously deal with the media and how to generally get across a clear message so that, you know, you can trust in for people to be able to participate in some sort of advocacy and that kind of stuff. So what I'm also going to do is put up a bunch of stuff, how to approach your local federal member for option X, you know, what's the best way to do that kind of stuff. Impacted. The biggest thing that I wanted to really express to you is that Australia to, I guess, have a collaboration of all the things that are concerned.
Have more people able to participate and basically not make attendance at LCA a condition on being part of the AGM. As it turned out, it didn't work. We didn't have very many people involved. So, as a show of hands, how many people would prefer... How many people don't care? Teething problems. If we stick to an online system, there are certainly lessons to be learned from the way we did it this year. And the fact that I'm standing here as president really means not very much at all, given the turnout that we had. I registered my cat and got it to vote.
Yes. I think that the actual voting process itself wasn't transparent enough.
And then the voting is like a band of LCA. Because LCA is